full steam ahead. And, you know, this is after a CBS poll in the wake of the debate found that 72% of Americans don't think that Biden is cognitively up to the job of being president. I don't know how you battle back against that. Gretchen Whitmer, who is governor of Michigan, reportedly called Biden's campaign and said Michigan is no longer really in play for the president, which, you know, it's important to pan back and realize the reason this debate happened when it did was the Biden campaign was taking the risk that it would turn things around, especially they've been trailing in all the swing states, which, as we know from bitter experience, is, regardless of the popular vote, a ticket to losing the election. So they took this incredible risk to do this debate in which Biden performed in a way that really troubles everyone following our politics. And they're now saying it's a greater risk to change horses, and the risk,
we have
the
to
risk
leave
has
it
already
there.
Been taken.
Chris Layman of The Nation, thanks so much. A very happy birthday to Isis Phillips, and we have a job opening. Director of Development, apply at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
We'd like you to meet a friend of ours who goes by the name of Killer Joe. Picture a so-called hippie or hip cat standing on a corner in a neatly pressed, double-breasted, form-fitting pinstripe suit, a pair of pointed-toed shoes with bold white stitches around the soles, a black shirt, long white tie.
Hi, I'm David Brower, David R. Brower, and I add the R because there are 100 other David Browers in the United States, and that keeps me separate from most of them. I like the direction you're going in, KBOO, Portland, and I wish you had a lot more company.
Tune in to Higher Reasoning Reggae every Sunday morning at 3 a.m. Higher Reasoning Reggae is dedicated to bringing international reggae word and sound power to the massive airing early Sunday mornings at 3 a.m. only on KBOO Portland.
KBOO's listeners value community, authenticity, and inclusion. If your business aligns with these values, underwriting on KBOO is an effective way to reach an engaged audience. Take advantage of the best rate and audience in Portland by going online to kboo.fm/underwriting. That's kboo.fm/underwriting.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, parking enforcement in Portland will ramp up starting July 8th.
Oregon state lawmakers look to further roll back protections for houseless people.
And in national news, the Supreme Court says presidents have absolute immunity.
Good evening. This is KBOO Evening News for Monday, July 1st, 2024. I'm Alex Solomon.
And I'm Reed Johnson. Parking enforcement is back on the menu in Portland. The Portland Bureau of Transportation, or PBOT, got the green light from City Council to hire 22 new parking enforcement officers. That's a big increase. It brings the number up to 81 officers, even more than were patrolling the streets before the pandemic. Their work starts July 8th, and they intend to target expired vehicle registrations and common parking infractions, even ones drivers might not know are illegal. Parking enforcement in Portland has been lax for a while, partially because of downsizing at PBOT, and partially because of the impact of DMV closures during the pandemic. For a while in 2021, people couldn't be ticketed for expired tags because it was so difficult to get into the DMV. Why now? It's partly a question of revenue. The increased enforcement is estimated to bring in about $5 million extra dollars for PBOT. The Bureau has been cash-strapped recently, and they're looking to parking enforcement to make up some of that gap. But advocates say they can only rely on parking funds for so long, and the department needs to pivot eventually. That's because as parking costs increase for drivers, they'll choose other modes of transportation. Overall, that's good for the city, but bad for PBOT's bottom line. And the money from parking fees goes towards road maintenance and other projects the Transportation Bureau takes on. Residential areas without meters will also be patrolled starting next week. That could mean getting tickets for common infractions like missing plates, that's an $85 fine, or parking facing the wrong way against traffic, a $55 fine.
The Supreme Court decision in Grants Pass v. Johnson on Friday allows cities to create homeless camping bans, regardless of the shelter space they have available. It also allows cities to punish people for not having anywhere to live. That case came out of Oregon, but it doesn't mean that things in Oregon will change right away. Oregon state law requires that any city ordinance about street camping be, quote, objectively reasonable, among other standards. It was championed by now Governor Tina Kotek when she was in the legislature. But there's already movement among state lawmakers to challenge that law next year. Two centrist Oregon Democratic lawmakers, Senator Mark Meek of Gladstone and Representative Paul Evans of Monmouth, say that they want to roll back those limits. They're joining Oregon Republicans in their calls to roll back the 2021 law. The Supreme Court decided that punishing people for being unhoused is not cruel or unusual. Now, advocates in Oregon say that state law is a critical one for guarding people's rights. Oregon Democratic leaders have yet to comment on where they stand, but the issue is expected to be a major one in the upcoming election.
The Supreme Court says presidents have, quote unquote, absolute immunity for official acts in a 6-3 decision out today. It's a case that's expected to have big implications for the prosecution of former President Donald Trump. Chief Justice John Roberts wrote on behalf of the conservative supermajority, stating that presidents are assumed to have immunity from criminal prosecution for their acts within the outer perimeter of their official responsibility. This means that Congress does not have the power to criminalize a president's official acts during their tenure in office. The decision does say that former presidents don't have immunity for quote-unquote unofficial acts, leaving much uncertainty pertaining to cases involving Mr. Trump. The Supreme Court's three liberal justices wrote a dissent condemning the ruling. Justice Sonia Sotomayor wrote that the majority was deeply wrong and insulated the president of the United States. She wrote, quote, orders the Navy's SEAL Team 6 to assassinate a political rival? Immune. Organizes a military coup to hold onto power? Immune. Even if these nightmare scenarios never play out, and I pray they never do, the damage has been done. The relationship between the president and the people he serves has shifted irrevocably, end quote. The decision shifts back to the lower courts to answer the question of whether Trump's actions to overturn the 2020 election were official or unofficial. This likely adds significant time and appeals to the pending trials against the former president.
This Thursday is the 4th of July, a holiday typically celebrated with fireworks shows. But some Portland metro area cities are moving away from these volatile displays for environmental and safety reasons. KBOO's Grant Button has the details.
Begin, it is important to be aware of regulations on fireworks throughout Oregon. Portland city officials began working to ban fireworks ever since the 2017 Eagle Creek Canyon fire, which was started by fireworks. This fire burned over 48,000 acres in the Columbia River Gorge. In 2022, Portland banned fireworks due to concerns for people, the environment, and pets. In February of 2023, Milwaukee followed, prohibiting the sale, possession, and use of fireworks within city limits. Other cities like Beaverton, Wilsonville, Tigard, and Oregon City enforced the state's restrictions on fireworks, which include restricted times in which fireworks can be sold and a ban on larger fireworks. People who break these laws can face civil or criminal charges, with fines up to $2,500 for possession of illegal fireworks. Tighter firework restrictions have prompted cities like Tigard, Lake Oswego, and Wilsonville to host 4th of July events with drone and laser shows as an alternative way to celebrate. Tigard High School will host a 4th of July event on its football field. And as the sun sets, attendees will be greeted by a display of 200 drones taking the air for around 30 minutes. Tigard Mayor Heidi Lube explained the city's choice to move away from fireworks. She said, quote, "With this change, we are able to address some of the concerns that we've heard about a traditional fireworks show and provide a celebration that can include everyone," end quote. Both Lake Oswego and Wilsonville will host free live concerts and laser shows, also a part of the growing movement to transition away from fireworks. For KBOO News, I'm Grant Button.
A call center in Washington helps to connect families experiencing homelessness with child care programs and ways to afford it. Eric Tagadoff has the details.
The high cost of child care in Washington can strain family budgets. It can be even harder when families are experiencing homelessness. A statewide call center is helping people find care and a way to afford it. BrightSpark Early Learning Services operates the Child Care Aware of Washington Family Center, which fields calls from families. The center also has homeless navigation services. Erica Washington with BrightSpark says staff ensure they understand each family's needs.
Does your little one have any special needs? And we're able to really pinpoint programs that meet each family's unique needs. This offers families some stability and just knowing that we're on their side, we have their back, and we're also understanding of some of the challenges that they may face.
Washington says the call center is able to connect families with state child care subsidies like Working Connections or through the homelessness grace period. The center also provides follow-up services after 30, 60, and 120 days. Washington talks about one family BrightSpark was able to help that moved to Washington and ended up needing housing. The family had one school-age child and two kids under the age of five. Washington says they connected the family with a child care program that understood how to support families experiencing homelessness.
So when transportation became an issue or when hours of operation became an issue, this child care provider was able to really support this family's needs and really become more like a family or support system for that parent.
Washington says the center wants to uplift families' voices and let them know how they can take action. She says they support enough families experiencing homelessness to understand their needs.
A lot of times the families who are experiencing homelessness are working evening hours or weekend hours, and that's a big challenge across our state of being able to find a child care program that's available during those hours. And so it's something that we hear time and time again, and we often are providing support, but that need continues to be there.
For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tagadoff.
Fallout from the first presidential debate continues. Advocates are upset by a recent Supreme Court ruling on homelessness, and House Republicans plan to sue the U.S. Department of Justice. With more on these stories, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
I don't walk as easy as I used to. I don't speak as smoothly as I used to. I don't debate as well as I used to. But I know what I do know. I know how to tell the truth.
Speaking at a North Carolina rally, President Joe Biden addressed fears about his performance in Thursday night's debate. His rambling answer sparked more questions about the mental fitness of history's oldest president. Democrats are searching for alternatives if Biden decides to step aside but lack a consensus replacement. Republicans are cheering former President Donald Trump's debate performance, despite him either avoiding answers to multiple questions or lying entirely. During a Virginia rally, Trump again said without proof the criminal justice system is rigged against him, and he charged that Biden has made America a global punchline.
Our country is being laughed at all over the world. Biden is using the weaponization of his Justice Department, the FBI, local district attorneys, and attorneys general to try and win an election.
Independent presidential candidate Robert F. Kennedy Jr. couldn't be in the debate, but gave a real-time reaction on social media. On government spending, he said Trump and Biden have both damaged America by increasing the national debt.
We have a $34 trillion debt now. The interest alone on that debt is costing us more than our military budget. Within 5 years, 50 cents out of every dollar that we collect in taxes will go to servicing the debt.
The Supreme Court is quickly handing down big decisions as the term ends. The justices issued a limited ruling allowing emergency abortions in Idaho, but a limited deference to federal agencies on areas they regulate. And Ann Oliva with the National Alliance to End Homelessness objects to the court's grant's past decision that municipal camping bans don't violate the Eighth Amendment.
Nationwide, we have a shortage of about 7.3 million units of available and affordable housing for people with the lowest incomes. So as a result of that shortage, there are more than 256,000 people living unsheltered on a given night across America.
The Supreme Court also threw out a charge against some January 6th rioters. The High Court ruled federal prosecutors overstepped when using a law against obstruction of an official proceeding. Legal observers say while the ruling will give many a basis for appeal, it's unlikely to result in a wave of lower sentences. Tomorrow, the House Judiciary Committee will file suit against the Justice Department trying to enforce subpoenas for the audio from President Joe Biden's interview with special counsel Robert Hur. Talking to reporters on Friday, Speaker of the House Mike Johnson said they're not trying to embarrass the president, but seeking to fully understand further why Hur didn't bring charges against him.
The president of the United States has told the attorney general not to turn over the tape. I think after last night's debate, I think we all understand very clearly why that is. He will very likely sound exactly on that tape as he did on the stage last night, and that's embarrassing to the president.
I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Making Contact. At 6, it's Labor Radio. At 6:30, it's Prison Pipeline. And then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather is clear with a low of 62. Tomorrow's weather, sunny with a high of 73. Today in history, the first Tour de France bicycle race took place in 1903. The race was invented to boost the popularity of the French newspaper L'Auto and ran from July 1st until the 19th. Contestants biked in six stages spanning over 1,500 miles, competing for over 6,000 francs. The race was considered successful enough to be rerun the following year and has since been a yearly tradition ever since, drawing over 3.5 billion views over the past few years. The quote of the day is from Lao Tzu, an ancient Chinese philosopher who is generally considered the founder of Taoism. He said, quote, "Knowing others is intelligence. Knowing yourself is true wisdom."
Native Youth Leadership Conference is on this weekend in Portland, bringing together young people from across the country. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Native young people from across the country are gathered in Portland this week. They're enhancing their leadership skills at the 2024 United National Indian Tribal Youth, or UNITY, Conference, as Rhonda Lavaldo reports.
This year's Unity Conference theme is Revitalizing Our Roots, which focuses on increasing access to cultural protective factors and traditional tools to improve the mental health of Native youth nationwide. First-time attendee Matani Hutchins says it's been a great experience.
Like, leadership-wise, like, it's good to, like, have communications with all the people to know, like, what needs to be done, what does not need to be done, and what's already finished. And that, other than that, you can, like, communicate, like, try to help others when they need it, and when they don't.
Many tribal royalty are in attendance. Miss Indian Northwest Leilani Wilson says it helps with her leadership skills.
For 2 years, I was our female co-president, and so I had to get up and talk about, you know, what we have done, you know, what we are accomplished or what we want to accomplish. So, you know, being and talking in front of the whole region, and it kind of brought me out of my shell, you know, especially with royalty. That's another thing, you know, it takes me out of my shell. It helps me work my public speaking skills.
On Monday, all attendees will take a trip to visit the Nike World Headquarters. The conference ends on July 3rd. This is Rhonda Lavaldo for National Native News.
A Wisconsin museum has sent a Chilkat robe it's had for the last 80 years to Sea Alaska Heritage Institute in Juneau, Alaska. The idea is to identify which clan it belongs to and give it back to them. KTOO's Yvonne Crumry has more.
In the basement of the Walter Sobolev building at Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, Emily Galgano opens a huge white cabinet. She pulls out a long drawer with a Chilkat robe inside. Its colors are faded.
So it could be very old or it could be less old. I'm assuming at least 100, 150 years old, but it's hard to say exactly.
Galgano is the Institute's archives and collections director. She says the robe is a diving whale design. Some of the black coloring has faded to purple and rust. Other spots are still rich and dark, which could indicate a different batch of dye. With gloves on, Galgano flips over a corner of the robe to reveal colors much closer to how they might have looked when the robe was new, dark blacks and bright yellows. Earlier this month, the robe was on display during celebration. Galgano had hoped that people might see it and know something about its origins.
So we're always working with the community to try and crowdsource that sort of information. This is the first time I've done something with an object like this that's of this scale, but we have done similar, smaller projects.
The robe is on loan from the Rahr West Museum in Manitowoc, Wisconsin. Greg Vadney, the museum's executive director, says they don't have anything else like it. He believes it came to the museum in the 1940s from someone who served in the Coast Guard in Alaska.
We have nothing else that we know of that even comes from the Pacific Northwest, let alone Alaskan tribal culture. So we were excited to be able to return it to its home.
He says the idea to reach out to SHI came from Manitowoc artist Skip Wallen, who designed the whale sculpture at the Whale Project in Juneau. Vadney says Rahr West is eager to return the robe to its original owners.
Certainly as a museum, oftentimes we kind of unfortunately look at the things as things and forget about the material culture of it and the human element, and in this case, the spiritual element that is inherent to it.
The robe is on loan to SHI for the next year, but it could stay in Juneau while the organizations decide next steps. I'm Yvonne Crumry.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Returning to local incendiary news, Washington County has a burn ban in effect starting this morning. Officials say there is a quote-unquote high fire danger in the region. This means backyard fires and open burning, agricultural burning, and other land clearing fires are banned. The burn ban doesn't apply to smaller outdoor fires that are used for warming, recreation, or cooking. Barbecues, grills, and smokers are still okay. Washington County fire chiefs are urging the public to use, quote, extreme caution when it comes to activities that could start a fire, including using fireworks. People who willfully break the burn ban can be on the hook to pay for the damages of a fire they caused. This comes as the Portland metro area is heading into a potentially record-breaking heat wave starting Thursday. That day, temperatures are expected to peak in the low 90s. But going into Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, meteorologists say there's a good chance of getting into triple digits. That could break records for hot temperatures for this time in July. Officials note that while the air is warm, area rivers may not be. They say people should be careful of cold water shock and be aware of currents and water temperatures.
Pier Pool in North Portland is temporarily closed for major repairs. The outdoor pool has a broken water line. On Thursday, workers noticed that the water level in the pool was dropping rapidly and that refilling it wasn't helping. They figured out that there was a broken pipe somewhere in the system. Repairing it will mean digging under the pool deck, fixing the plumbing, and resurfacing the concrete. It's not known yet how long those repairs will take. Swim lessons scheduled for Pier Pool have been moved to Peninsula Pool at 700 North Rosa Parks in Portland.
The interstate bridge between Hood River and White Salmon reopened on Sunday after a three-day closure. For now, it's limited to passenger vehicles since it was a semi-truck that damaged the bridge and caused the closure last week. An excavator on the back of a truck crashed into the lift span above the road, causing severe damage to the bridge's structure. Repairs over the weekend allowed the bridge to reopen to traffic on Sunday afternoon. That's important since the bridge is used often by residents in the Columbia Gorge, including for folks who work on an opposite side of the river or who may need medical attention. The bridge is 100 years old this year and has been in line for replacement, the Port of Hood River says. It's not yet known when the bridge may open to other types of traffic. A member of the engineering team said in a press release that they recommended limiting traffic in order to, quote, prevent another accidental strike to the overhead bracing while the bridge remains in a damaged state, end quote.
Agricultural experts say it's no secret that a handful of companies dominate the meat production industry in the U.S. That can make it harder for farmers who sell them the beef to contest unfair practices in court. A proposed federal rule aims to give independent producers more leverage. Mike Moen reports.
From North Dakota to Texas, the beef raised on farms goes through a production process controlled by four major companies. Independent ranchers hope a proposed federal rule gives them more power to act if they feel they've been ripped off. The USDA says its plan, unveiled last week, would provide clarity regarding unfair market practices under the Packers and Stockyards Act. Aaron Shire of the National Farmers Union says in the past, some courts have said there needs to be more proof the broader market is harmed in these cases. He says this update addresses that particular problem within the longstanding law.
It has many producer protection elements. And so over the long history of this law, that has gotten confused and muddled. And so this proposed rule is meant to set the record straight on that issue.
Supporters say not only does that help prevent smaller farmers from going out of business, but also potentially gives consumers a fair shake on the prices they pay for meat and poultry. Industry groups like the Meat Institute are criticizing the move, saying it would set meat production back decades by encouraging litigation while actually hurting consumers. The Institute also questions efforts like these when cattle prices remain at record levels. But Shire suggests there are specific examples of questionable tactics that go beyond current market dynamics.
And that's failure to pay. If a meat packer, someone in the market, fails to pay a producer, that is something USDA has consistently taken action on.
And with more clarity under the law, policy analysts say there might be more consistency regarding court decisions when individual farmers push back against an industry giant. Shire says the ultimate goal is to avoid lawsuits with this action and similar steps recently taken by the USDA, setting a tone that fosters market competition. A public comment period is the next step ahead of the rule becoming final. This is Mike Moen for Prairie News Service.
You might not know this, but today is National Postal Workers Day. Mail carriers are in the spotlight, as well as some of the challenges they face doing their jobs. Once more, our very own Grant Button.
Today is National Postal Workers Day, a celebration of the job they do to deliver the mail. Postal workers provide a vital service, especially during big election years like 2024 and in states like Oregon, where elections are conducted completely by mail. Daniel Cortez is the Oregon Legislative and Political Director for the American Postal Workers Union.
Whether it be America's election mail or letters from grandparents, care packages to our service members overseas, vital prescriptions for our seniors and veterans. It's important to remember that all of that happens because of the dedication of the postal workers day in and day out.
The United States Postal Service began with Benjamin Franklin on July 26, 1775. The Postal Service is currently experiencing a shakeup. Trump-appointed Postmaster General Luis DeJoy is implementing his 10-year Delivering for America plan to modernize the Postal Service's network. It's meant job eliminations and sorting center cuts that Cortez says have hurt mail delivery. For instance, he notes that sorting in Oregon has been consolidated to one center in Portland.
It's imperative that the American people know that this slowdown is manufactured by the Postal Service. Everything from failure to properly staff offices to just deliberately slowing down how fast mail moves.
DeJoy has remained in office under President Joe Biden because only the Post Board of Governors can oust him. Biden has delayed nominations for the board, also delaying any potential change in leadership at the Postal Service. For KBOO News and the Public News Service, I'm Grant Button.
Giant cylindrical sails could propel the cargo ships of the future. It's just one idea among many for harnessing wind to help ships save fuel. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. About 90% of products shipped globally travel by sea, mostly on big cargo ships. These vessels burn a lot of fossil fuels, which warm the climate and are expensive. One round-trip voyage from China to the U.S. costs millions of dollars in fuel alone.
The fuel cost is about 30 to 50% of the operating cost of a typical shipping line.
Kuching Zha is an engineering professor at the University of Miami and runs CoFlow Jetlift, a startup. His company is one of many that are developing technologies to help cargo ships harness the power of the wind so they burn less fuel. Some strategies use rigid sails, turbines, or spinning rotors to help propel the ships. Zha's approach uses big stationary cylinders, each about 75 feet high, that would be mounted to a ship's deck. The cylinders suck in air, then pressurize and eject it in a different direction to generate thrust. He says his research and prototypes suggest the technology could cut ships' fuel use by 20 to 50%. So he sees great potential in using wind power to propel a cleaner future for marine shipping.
We are very excited and motivated.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News for Monday, July 1st, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes myself and Grant Button. The producer and engineer is Althea Billings. Special thanks to Eric Tagadoff, Antonia Gonzalez, Edwin J. Vieira, and the indescribable Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of Evening News is the high flyer of the airwaves herself, Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Reed Johnson.
And I'm Alex Solomon. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Making Contact.
System is in too many ways broken.
The way we see the world shapes the way that we treat it.
This is Making Contact.
I'm Amy Gastelum. This is Making Contact. Last week, we brought you a story about one Hoosier family's journey to continue their 11-year-old daughter Kieran's gender-affirming